Did you see how he's snacking the fact that Chelsea letting Pochettino go means that it's Man City? Who said Chelsea were title contenders? Who? They are telling people what you think I think about my manager. Why are you talking for me?
He's projecting his assumptions on all of us.
You see what you are doing?
Welcome to another episode of Bar Stop Diaries. Today, we are taking our bus to England, where the most exciting football competition returns after 2 months break. It's been a period where many clubs have been in the market trying to secure some of the best talents to shore up their teams to make them very competitive in this year's English Premier League. Manchester City, defending champions, Manchester United, the Chasing Park, Chelsea, Tottenham Hotspur, Aston Villa, Newcastle United, Liverpool. All these clubs are getting ready to compete for the ultimate crown, which is currently being held by Manchester City. Well, many people actually believe that with the decision of Chelsea to part company with Mauricio Pochettino and the decision of Jurgen Klopp to walk away from Liverpool, it is Manchester City's title to lose once again. And here on Bar Stop Diaries, we'll be talking about the English Premier League. And I've been joined here by my colleagues, Victor Achutamaklu and Daniel Cranton. But I am Muftau Nabila Abdullah. This conversation can be found on myjoyonline.com, also on YouTube, on TuneIn, on Spotify, and as well as Stitcher. So if you want to enjoy the Bar Stop Diaries, do not forget that these are the platforms that it is made readily available for you to enjoy the content. And we are always on standby to hear the feedback from you, because you are the most important person when it comes to these conversations. We are here because you matter. And as I mentioned, my colleagues, Victor Achutamaklu and Daniel Cranton, I hear. They are both Manchester United fans. Disgruntled Manchester United fans, for that matter. Simply because Erik ten Hag, one man that Daniel Cranton threw his weight behind appointed.
Why are you putting opinions? Why are you speaking for me? No, I want to understand. Why are you speaking for me? You've done an introduction. They are telling people what you think I think about my manager. Why are you talking for me? Meanwhile, in your intro, did you see how he's snacking the fact that Chelsea letting Pochettino go means that it's Man City? Who said Chelsea were title contenders? Why did you sneak that into the conversation? Why? So if Pochettino didn't go, like, Chelsea be title contenders? You see what you are doing?
He's projecting his assumptions on all of us.
You see what you are doing?
Projecting your assumptions on all of us.
Actually, I am putting myself in the position of Fentio. So I'm speaking on behalf of Fentio. He's a Chelsea fan, you know.
The thing with Chelsea is that the insanity, you know, it trickles right from the top to down. You see the confusion in the players they sign?
Mm.
Yeah. The confusion in the appointments they make. Mm. In every decision they make at the club, the confusion is not restricted to only the decision makers, players, coaches, even the fans.
35 players in the last 3 years.
They now have how many? 7 goalkeepers.
But they are creative. The way you've just denied Erik ten Hag, I'm not happy. Actually changed.
You see what is happening here?
Account name.
He did not deny
Erik ten Hag.
Uh-huh.
When he was appointed. What has changed?
You see, you are trying to be a politician.
I'm not a politician. I'm stating
but
facts.
I'm also into politics. So, Muftau, you started the show by assuming what I was going to see. You are not in my heart or in my head or in my feelings. You don't know what I'm thinking. You don't know what I'm feeling. So, you ask me the question and then let me answer. Don't try and talk for me. Yes, when Ten Hag, in fact, before Ten Hag came to Man United, I lobbied for him to get a job.
Really?
Yes. I have connections with Ed Woodward at the time. I lobbied for him to get a job.
You spoke to the Glazers too?
Of course. We are like this. Okay. So after the discussions, long discussions, endless nights, pushing for Ten Hag to get a job. I'm not one of those people where if I like you and you are joking, I'll pamper and I'll come and defend you. No. If I know what you are capable of, and you come and you are joking, I'll call you out. I'll be the first person to call you out.
So
because those who heard me, those who heard me lobbying for him, expect, you see, people, they rate me. You understand?
Yeah.
So if I say, Ten Hag should get a job. They say Dani said Ten Hag should get a job. Yeah. So if Ten Hag is joking, I won't come and sit there and defend you.
In fact, I recall when Ed Woodward went to that meeting with the Glazers, he said Daniel Cranton insisted that Ten Hag should be given the job.
And you see, I'm the kind of over the years from when Ferguson was there, when I suggest something to the Man United board, they listen to me. When Ronaldo was going to City, I picked up the phone, I called them. I said, don't let it happen. 3 hours later, Ronaldo was in a Man United shirt. So I have those links. Mm. So the point is, you see, Ten Hag has come into Man United. First season was okay, it was good. Depending when you consider the circumstances. Last season was a complete disaster. And it's not just about the results on the pitch. It's about his disposition. Excuse after excuse after excuse. You see, when you are managing at a certain level, when like it's like Ghana, you are the president of Ghana. We didn't vote you in to come and give us excuses. We voted you in to come and work. So me, I don't buy that. If I blast Nanado and Bawumia for always giving us excuses, COVID, Russia, Ukraine war, I also blast the Hag if he's also giving excuses. That's how it is. You understand? Because you are my United manager and your job is to make me happy every weekend. So if you are adding to my sadness and my sorrow, I'll call you out. So he has up to November.
November?
Oh, yes.
Oh, but the season starts tomorrow for him.
Oh, August, September, October, November. Let's say 3.5 months.
Yes.
3.5 months is good enough for Man United. You see, Man United must be in a strong top three position by November. Else, the person they brought in as number two, I was also the one who brought him in. Van Nistelrooy.
And Ten Hag knows it.
He knows.
He knows it. If you look at decisions that a club has made over time,
yeah,
or at least in the last 6 months, they sacked all of his assistants, like all of them, right? In fact, the only guy remaining there has to be the guy who was the fitness instructor under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Mm.
So Ruud van Nistelrooy, the guy from Go Ahead Eagles, all of these coaches. And that is something no elite coach worth his money will tolerate, that you will sign assistant coaches for them. It is in places like Ghana where the Black Stars will appoint a coach and then they will tell him that you sit down, we'll get you your appointment. At that level, that doesn't happen. But they will do it to a coach who knows that he has no option and who knows that he's sitting on very thin ice. He's living on very thin ice. So that is the situation. Also, the fact that United did not extend his contract, but they triggered that option too. That's the insurance that these days all clubs use.
Yeah.
To use that 1 year to figure themselves out, yeah, and see what or who they can get in that time. If they believe in you, you get an actual contract extension. Because the automatic renewal, or that term that we often hear them say, option to, yeah, or they've triggered the option to extend for it, it is with the same conditions. You are not getting a raise.
Mm-hmm.
In Ten Hag's case, they have reduced his power because he does not have the final say as far as transfers are concerned. Now, there is a whole body in place for that. Although his opinion will matter, but it's no longer a case of, I want Danny Kaye, and then they signed Danny Kaye for him. So in terms of his veto on transfers, it is no longer what it was before. In terms of his conditions of service, it has not improved even as he enters the final year of his contract. In terms of who the supporting cast is, and it's the final straw that shows you that, look, United are preparing for life after him. A lot of the appointments they made are people who are capable of taking over this job in an interim basis, and not necessarily people who will be required to be loyal to Erik ten Hag.
So what both of you have suggested is that Man United leadership do not have confidence in Erik ten Hag.
I think he's not earned the confidence.
Yeah.
Because, and look, for me,
if you don't have confidence in the person, climb off.
No, he's not earned it. That's the thing.
So he has not earned it. He has not earned the right to continue as head coach.
In football, look, forget about the gaslighting and all of those. It's cause and effect. The real cause of all of the real cause of the gaslighting and the lies he was spewing in his presses was the fact that he was failing. And so he needed to sell out a certain narrative. United, for the most part of Ten Hag's tenure, have looked uncoached. United, for the most part, especially last season, did not look like a team that had a lot of thinking behind the football they were playing. And so you would see repeated patterns in terms of the goals they were conceding and the mistakes that they were making. How many times did we not talk about how United were constantly being killed by third man runs,
yeah,
the late runs,
yeah,
and how inside the edge of the penalty area, at the edge of the D, United were always going to concede chances and goals from that area. The fact that it was repetitive, the fact that I could sit in Kokomlemle half a world away and see it play out every now and then, and still United could not appear to have a problem, is just symptomatic of a bad technical leadership.
Tactical Achusa is that he sat in Kokomlemle and saw all the patterns of flaws.
I mean, if it is obvious to the untrained eye like mine, you who has the advantage of technology, you have all of these video analysts with you.
You can see.
You can't see. No. So clearly, does this suggest that ushering us into the new Premier League season, Manchester United is probably one of those teams that is not well placed to compete? Is this what he suggests?
No, compete for the title, I think, is a bit too early. But I'm excited going into the new season because the problems that the transfers have addressed, it's substantial enough. Look, it's giving United an opportunity to go into the season and have a realistic shout for top three, top four. So that is a good step. And then, you see, I like systematic building. I don't like when it is scattered and it's all over the place. You know that it's not being done properly.
Yeah.
So you start with this season. I think that's why Ten Hag wasn't given that a contract renewal with new different or a whole new different set of parameters based on what it's basically the same contract that has been triggered. Now, you've addressed the defense, which was a huge issue for Man United last season. Multiple injuries, multiple underperforming players who are just not up to the standard of Man United. About three defenders have come in. One has left. It looks like another one will leave. Lindelof or Maguire will leave. Then in the midfield also, there are talks of Ugarte signing in the next in the coming days, which I'm very eager. And then in attack also, Joshua Zexy is also coming, and he's a very dynamic type of player, so he can play on the left, on the right, the number 9 and number 10. Very interesting, workable. Like, he's the sort of player when you have in your team, he can do a number of different jobs, so that is also a plus. But at the end of the day, you just want to give yourself enough options all around to help you moving on into the new season. And that's what Arsenal have. That's what Arsenal have this time around. That's what Manchester. I think Arsenal even have it in more abundance than Man City. Man City losing some players over the past two seasons has left them in a very interesting position. Obviously, because they have Pep, they are obviously going to challenge. There's always stability. There's always hope. There's always a realistic chance of you winning the massive and big silverware. But in terms of what is happening on the ground, what we can see, physical evidence, I think Arsenal have that, for example, Ben White started at right back last season. He was starting most games at right back last season. It was Saliba, Gabriel, and then Zinchenko at the start, and later on went on to Kivior. So this time around, Arsenal can play Tomiyasu, they can play Timber, who is back, they can play Calafiori, who is a fantastic center back, and then they can play Kivior or Zinchenko. That's an entire new backline, which is capable of battling any team. Partey can start. They don't need Partey to start. Jorginho can start in that number 6. They don't need him to start every game. There's Rice. There's Mikel Merino, who is coming in. Then there's Odegaard. Then Charlie Squad.
You know one thing Arsenal don't have?
Well,
a goal scorer.
Okay.
But they have goals.
They do have goals.
But they have but goals from different aspects of the team.
Yes. But the difference between City and Arsenal last season, quite apart from the depths that City had, and so they could rotate, especially in the cup games, without it significantly affecting the results they were getting, is the extra 20 goals, the extra 15 goals that Erling Haaland gives them, that Arsenal don't necessarily have. I was hoping that they will be able to move on Eddie Nketiah and then maybe top whatever windfall that will come out of that transfer, top it up, and then go onto the market and find a centre forward. But I think that the growth that Arsenal have experienced in the last 3 or 4 years is enough to make up for that particular shortfall. And that's why I perhaps will tip them to win the Premier League this season. Look, you know how we used to talk about the Champions League in the sense that teams need to go through a cycle of top, or you go through a season and a few disappointments, and it builds you up and you are able to learn from your mistakes and adjust to the requirements of winning those competitions.
Yeah.
I think Arsenal are at that point where their experiences over the years, the results that they are picking. And so 2 years ago, they perhaps may not have been able to find consistency after a bad result at Anfield or after playing City. But as we saw last season, the only problem they had was the lack of depth in that particular squad. Yeah. And I think this is the season that they catch up with City.
So in all this conversation, where do you put Liverpool and Chelsea?
No, Chelsea, I don't put them anywhere close to the title. But for Liverpool, look, if you have it, I think that this is one of the most seamless transitions that I've seen in modern day football, where Klopp and the guys at Liverpool left this squad good enough for anybody who is coming in to manager. Be able to, yeah, for the next manager. They started that rebuild of the attack about 3-4 years ago. Started preempting the fact that Mane would leave, Firmino would leave. So now they have options in Gakpo, in Salah, in Diogo Jota, in Luis Diaz, Darwin Nunez. That spot, the attack is beefed up. You come to midfield and what they did last season, they lost basically their entire midfield and had to reconstruct. Yeah. So I thought on paper that team was good enough to win the league. But in reality, they needed to understand themselves a bit because the midfield is the heart of the team, it's the engine. So you need some familiarity to be able to start getting things ticking. But this time around, they've gone through a whole year. Bicetis is coming back from injury. They have McAllister, who had a really good season last time around. Yeah. Szoboszlai is now a year experience in the Premier League. Yeah. So all round, obviously, every team, every fan will want their team to beef up certain positions. I think the only issue that Liverpool may have is in centre-back. But even in that, we saw Gerard Kwanza come in last season. And he was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And for me, if you have that luxury, and obviously we're always talking about from the start of last season, we're talking about the lack of depth on the right-hand side of defence. Then Conor Bradley came in halfway through the season, and he looks like a very good fit for Liverpool. So they've not necessarily needed to spend money to beef up certain areas of their team. They have now two really good right backs in Bradley and then Alexander Arnold. Kwanzaa is also now a very good centre back option with Van Dijk, with Konate, with Gomez. But it's about the coach. The coach is also walking into a team where I feel that the players and the philosophy around the team suits what he's used to doing. And I think that's what we saw at preseason. I'm not one who uses preseason results to judge a team.
Yeah.
You look at more of style and implementation and principles and the rules and instructions that are given. And you can tell that there's not too much of a direct shift from what we saw Klopp doing at the team. As to whether Ancelotti has that ruthless winning mentality to push Man City and Arsenal all the way, that's we are yet to see. But I think this Liverpool team is good enough. At least I think they will be able to push up until like April. But in other competitions, I think they are primed to give a real shot. In the Champions League, I think Liverpool will be a force to reckon with in the Champions League, in the cup competitions also. But I think Man City and Arsenal just have a bit of a higher ceiling than Liverpool. I think if anything, Liverpool will finish in a comfortable third position.
I'm not as positive on Liverpool's outlook for one reason. And it's the fact that
Liverpool fans will not be happy.
Hear me on. It's the fact that whatever good we think they can achieve is based on the assumption that Slot can recreate the scenarios that Klopp created to make that squad thrive. At the beginning of last season, we all looked at that Liverpool squad and we said, this team may not be able to go the long haul. In fact, one of the things that was pretty obvious was the lack of a holding midfielder, an elite one. And so, beyond our thoughts, Liverpool in their signings or their attempted signings reflected that appreciation of what we all said.
Yeah.
In the sense that what we said they needed is what exactly they went out to try and get. Although, both of them ended in disgrace. In Romeo Lavia and then Caicedo.
Yeah.
They went to the market with a truckload of money and then they got rejected.
And in fact, someone too just, is this the
Zubi.
Oh, it is a club without aura. So players will
reject. I don't say it because you're a Man U fan.
No. But we are just talking about a track record of elite players who Liverpool have
tried
jump through the hoops to go and sign And all of them have turned Liverpool down. Look, if you take it two or three seasons back, there was Aurelio Tchouaméni as well. So as for Liverpool's lack of aura, it's always been there. But I'm just saying that they recognized that the squad they had at the time was not enough to compete. Unfortunately for them, Klopp could make it work. I would want to give this time before I would trust and slot or have similar expectations of him. Let me put it that way. I think that he is not helped by the fact that there appears to be no clarity over the biggest players in this Liverpool team. Alisson is into the final 2 years of his contract, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Trent has got less than a year remaining on his contract.
Mm-hmm.
He is not prepared to commit. Van Dijk is in a similar situation. Mohamed Salah as well. What sort of scenario? And there's a real possibility that at the end of this season, Slot now has to rebuild again because two or three of those players have moved on.
Or are likely to move on.
Are likely. As it stands now, the reality is that they will walk out at the end of their contract because there is no agreement in place for them to extend. So that sort of uncertainty does not necessarily help. Also, it would have been better if you had handed the manager his own new set of toys to go out there and then work. This assumption that he should be able to recreate the scenarios that Klopp did is not a... I mean, if for even Jurgen Klopp, we could all say that the squad is not good enough and that they exceeded expectations by finishing in the top three.
Correct.
Then you have to now be consistent in your assessment as a club and even your investment, right? In going out there and behave in a manner that suggests that you want to be progressive and do this. And here's the final point on the Liverpool thing. There's a reason why a lot of us did not give credit to a lot of the players who even did well last season and rather looked at it from the viewpoint of this is purely Klopp's fabrication, right? Diaz was not consistent. Yes, he had that period where we all got emotional about him. Perhaps the worst culprit was Darwin Nunez. How much did they pay for him? Almost a 90 million
about
euros.
About 89 million.
Yeah. If not more.
And 85, 89.
When Salah was not finding his mojo, there was none of these boys able to step up. And then Diogo Jota also had his injury problems and all of that. I would have hoped that at the very least, they would have made one attacking signing and perhaps move one of those forwards on, right? Just shuffle the pack a bit. Or even in central midfield areas, all of us are now hoping that somehow Slot will be able to work some magic on Ryan Gravenberch, who the last time Gravenberch had a decent football season was 4 years ago at Ajax. If you look at the other midfield options, we are hoping that Szoboszlai will also be consistent. So there's essentially no one in that midfield that you can trust. If there's anyone you can trust in attack, it's the big man himself, Mohamed Salah. But beyond that, I think this squad will require too much from and Slot for Liverpool to succeed, as opposed to they equipping him to go out there and then excel.
And you know one thing, maybe Liverpool fans might be looking out for a surprise element, something that Grant will always talks about often,
see,
when it comes to...
The only positive in this situation for Ancelotti is that he has a honeymoon for this season and probably for next season as well, if the players we expect to move on.
I don't think...
I will not...
You genuinely think that Liverpool fans will give him that honeymoon?
I will not slate him if he doesn't win the league.
It's not even about Liverpool fans. Look, when you've been in the wilderness for so long and somebody has taken you now within to a certain height, you don't come to give somebody the next person another honeymoon. I don't think Liverpool have brought Ancelotti in to come and feel it and see if he can. They are bringing him because they believe he can.
Yeah.
And I'm saying that, look, There was context to us saying the Liverpool team at the start of last season wasn't good enough because of the relative inexperience.
Yeah.
Playing a year in the Premier League is enough for you to now push on. There are so many players who came. Look, when Grealish joined Man City in his first season, even though he had Premier League experience, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But from the preseason into the second season, you could tell that the understanding was coming. And you could tell that this is a player who will be much different from what we saw last season. If you've watched Liverpool's preseason, look, they are, even from the end of last season, where they seem to have lost gear a bit. But in terms of individual performances, you could tell a clear understanding now of the ways of the Premier League. People like Szoboszlai, who came in, even Gakpo was looking really good on the second half of last season. Mm-hmm. Now, it's his countryman who is going to coach him. Players like Darwin Nunez, who do everything well except scoring goals. Seriously, there's a place for players like that in football.
The boy has phobia for scoring goals.
No, it's true. Because to be frank, any Liverpool fan will go back to the previous front three generation of Salah, Mane, and Firmino. Firmino was a terrible finisher.
But he had two goal scorers.
Yeah, they had two goal scorers. Yeah. But this time, there's Salah. Gapo, you see, the thing about Liverpool is that the guy on the left-hand side has not been too consistent in terms of appearances. But in terms of numbers, when you combine it, it is giving you what Mane was giving you. So what it is that Salah is a constant. Whoever will start on the other side, or whichever two people will start on the other side, should be able to give you a certain number of goals. And Liverpool are getting that number of goals. I don't think goal scoring was as compared to defending last season. I don't think goal scoring was an issue. But Liverpool missed a ton of chances to score.
If you look at the numbers, it gives you one perception. You get a bigger picture if you look at the breakdown of against who they scored those goals and at what point in the season.
Okay.
Darwin Nunez, for example. How do you tell me that at this level, post-February, he didn't score a goal in the league? And that is the home stretch of the season.
Is he Anthony?
So please, we are being serious here. So those are some of the dynamics that from around that time, and this is typically when Firmino, Salah will come into their fold.
Yeah.
So Mane will do the job from beginning until somewhere November, December, and then Salah will take over from then on. Or sometimes, I think in the last 2 years before Mane left, you would have Salah firing until December, and then Mane's goals will carry them to the end of the season. The problem with this setup is that you don't have those strong personalities who, in the home stretch of the season, will give you those moments. And you see, in that period, you don't need to score 10 or 15 goals. It is just that split, that important game that the team needs that goal to get over the line. Look, for me, if Slot finishes in the top four and he makes the quarters of the Champions League and doesn't necessarily embarrass himself in the cup competitions, I think that would be a good season to start with.
Okay. Okay. Gentlemen, I want us to do something pretty quick. Basically, I want us to look at certain things. Your top four for the season, then also the teams you think will be relegated, your worst signing, your top scorer, and all that. Let me start with Tachu.
So for the top four, I think Arsenal, Champions, City, Liverpool.
Runners up. Okay.
Yeah, Liverpool third, Man United fourth. Now that they have started making the right acquisitions, for the teams that will be relegated, I know for sure Southampton. Okay. I know for sure Ipswich. And one other team. But of these two, I'm certain. Leicester are not getting relegated. People will be surprised. Which other question? Top scorer.
Top scorer.
Erling Haaland. So long as he's in that space, nobody's outscoring.
What about, who do you think will be your worst signing for this season?
I'm torn.
It
will definitely come from Chelsea. It will definitely come from Chelsea.
Because of why?
Because the environment there is so toxic. There is no clarity over even the kind of football they want to play. There's no clarity over the kind of coaching the players have to. And you see, in the last 2 years, they've had about three or four coaches.
Mm.
You will leave players technically or tactically confused because you're giving them different set of instructions almost every 6 months.
Yeah.
There is no continuity there. The environment there is not ripe enough for anyone to find consistency. If we're going to have a flop of the season, it will come from Chelsea.
Nana Kranten.
I said it last season. I'll say it again. Arsenal will win the league. Last season, I was off by just 2 points. So those who were shouting should keep quiet because 2 points, losing out on 2 points is as close.
So this is just give me credit. You are suggesting that I should keep quiet?
No, yeah, you should keep quiet. You should give me credit. You should give me credit for being bold enough to call that Arsenal will win the league. That's a
why
tough
should
call.
I give you credit when you've not...
Because anybody can go for the easy thing and say Man City will win. And if Man City doesn't win, nobody will come and give you pressure. But I was bold enough to call the Arsenal win.
So did we give you pressure?
Yeah, you gave me pressure. None of you believed. But in the last days, you were all hot. And you were praying that Arsenal would drop points. But the point is that I think Arsenal will win again.
Okay.
I think I'm going again that Arsenal will win. Not Arsenal will win again. Even win last time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Arsenal will win the league. Mm-hmm. Man City in second. Mm-hmm. Liverpool, Man United, or it could flip. If Ten Hag is gone by November, Man United will finish third. Liverpool finish fourth. But I think I'm setting up with that top four.
top goal scorer?
I think it's between Salah and Haaland.
And Haaland?
Yeah, straight.
The team is to be relegated?
Wolves, Southampton, Ipswich.
Okay. Worst signing?
This transfer window is very difficult. Like, it's very difficult to tell. Maybe after the first few weeks, you can tell who is destined to be a flop. But for now...
He had.
No, you see, I just said Chelsea, but even Chelsea...
You don't even know the importance
attached to certain signings. Like, yeah. You don't know how they
are...
You
know who's a good candidate? Yeah. You know who's a good candidate? Neto.
Pedro.
He's not even going to play enough.
No, but if Neto flop, it will not be because of performance. It's because
he's unfit. Ask for the boy. He won't even play.
Fitness issues. That's the problem. So let me wrap up with La Liga. It would be unfair to our European football followers.
No, it won't be unfair. You know it won't be unfair. Mm. You see, football has never been straightforward.
It'll be Real Madrid. Or Barcelona.
It won't be Real Madrid or Barcelona and Pool. The Barca fans, the Barca management, the Barca coach, the Barca players, they know they can't compete with Real Madrid next season. They know, deep in their hearts. Don't shout and cry. But the end of the day, they know that they are not, you see, they've not reached that level where they can compete. Barca have really good players, talents. But these talents can't see you through a 10-man season in the league, week in, week out. They can't. We saw it last season. Look, I said what Xavi did with that Barca team 2 seasons ago was a complete miracle. It won't happen again until this team has grown enough with the experience and has settled.
Yeah.
It's a new coach coming in into a very inexperienced team, talented, inexperienced team.
And also another toxic environment, just as he spoke of Chelsea.
Yeah, the only thing that Barca are setting with is top four. As for La Liga, like, the teams are not competitive enough to push them. So, I think Real Madrid will win quite easily. In fact, it will be easier than what they did last season. I think Atletico and Barca will battle for second and third. Mm-hmm. As for fourth position, I'm hoping that Iñaki Williams and Athletic Bilbao, but La Liga's fourth position, nobody cares. It's not competitive.
Yes. Maybe Girona might just be another surprise.
Girona Champions League will take them back to 10th
place.
I think this is perhaps going to be the easiest league title Real Madrid have won. Because, look, we are 72 hours from Barca's first game of the season, Nobisu. And their biggest signing of the summer has still not been registered.
They've not registered Dani Olmo.
Are you serious?
Can they be new?
Are you serious? Like, you are a serious football club. 72 hours before your season opener,
yeah,
you have not registered your biggest signing of the summer.
Mm.
Are you serious? And you see, this is not.
They need to balance
this. This is the current state of affairs of Barcelona. In 2021, they signed Aguero. A day before their league opener, they had not registered Aguero. They had to do some financial gymnastics and engineering to be able to.
Lewandowski
went the same. Jules Koundé, Rafinha,
Memphis Depay.
Last season, the same thing happened. And you see, some of these signings were free transfers. Lewandowski,
free transfers,
but they couldn't. Yet they are the same club spending an inordinate amount of money on players they don't even need. Dani Olmo is a brilliant player, but the question I keep asking myself is, what problem does he solve for Barcelona that requires spending north of 60 million euros for? If it is about squad debts, if the argument is that you need more legs, that you need more quality, for a club going through austerity, whatever you're going to spend on that player should be minimum 30 million euros. You're not rich. You're not at the stage where you can start flexing your muscles financially. So you behave in a manner that allows you to. At the end of July, Barca were asking Inigo Martinez if he could take a pay cut so that they can create room to register some of those players. And you see, Inigo Martinez was signed only a year ago. Last year, 2 weeks before the season started, Inigo Martinez had not been registered. They had asked some of the players who were already at the club to take pay cuts. All of them refused. 2 years before, in Erik ten Hag's first season, they tried everything to sell Frankie de Jong. In fact,
yeah,
without
yeah.
a player's agreement, yeah. they agreed the deal with Manchester United. And then the player said he won't go because they needed the money. And the other thing was that Barca had not paid his salary. They owed him some deferred payments they were supposed to pay. They had not. Then the guy said, if you want me to go, pay me all the monies that you owe me till this point. Before they were broke, they couldn't afford it.
So here, number one, Real Madrid, right?
Real Madrid, number one.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Atletico Madrid. Or
no, but they will still get number two because okay. as Daniel explained, the other teams are not good enough to push them.
Okay.
So Atletico...
La Liga fans will not be here.
The other thing is that every season Atletico splash big money, they disappoint in La Liga. Check the last 5 or 6 years. Every time they go big. Remember the Joao Felix season?
Oh, yeah.
This season, they've gone to pay 85 million euros for Julian Alvarez. They are on the verge of signing Conor Gallagher because it looks like that deal is back on. They are one team I do not trust with attacking talent, especially the ones who they pay top dollar for. it's hardly worked out in recent times.
So okay.
I think they are nailed on for third place. I think if Sociedad are able to retain Mikel Merino and Zubimendi, they have a good chance at top four.
Okay.
Yeah, they have a very good chance at top four.
Okay. This has been Bust of Diaries. Today, we took our bus to England and also to Spain, where we are wrapping up the conversation. But this conversation is on myjoyonline.com. It's also on YouTube, Spotify, TuneIn, Google Podcast, Amazon Podcast, Apple, and Stitcher. Avin Muftar and Abila Abdullahi. Continue to follow us as we'll be coming your way with the next episode of Bust of Diaries. We appreciate your company.